Over the next week, KYMN is doing a series on Laura Baker Services Association, shedding light on the positive impacts and the value that service providers have on local communities, from economic benefits to inspirational stories of people with intellectual and developmental disabilities. The idea is to present a more holistic view of the provider industry itself and of LBSA, from challenges to triumphs to ways in which we can enrich each other's lives. My guest today is Executive Director of Laura Baker Services, Sandy Gurdes. Sandy, you have been with LBSA since...
1983.
Okay, so you've got some street cred going on for you. For those less familiar, would you give us a brief explanation of Laura Baker, what you do, who those people are, and what it's like for the community?
Sure. So we support people with intellectual and developmental disabilities to live the lives that they choose. We were begun in 1897 by our founder, Ms. Laura Baker, and we've been doing those services ever since. And our focus is always on the individual, ensuring that the person gets the services and supports that they need. And that includes teaching and support. Many people think of services as being caretaking, mm-hmm. That we're taking care of the person. Mm-hmm. But really, we're teaching and supporting people to live their own lives.
And it is very individual.
It is.
How many clients do you have? How many residents do you have?
So we have 54 residents, but we serve about 85 people. So okay. We serve people in their own homes as well as in our residential programs. We also have other services that we provide. We do a family support services, which is a respite event for families mm-hmm. that we do once a month. And we also meet with families on a regular basis to hear what their challenges are and see how we might be able to address some of those challenges.
That's huge. I mean, that's really big to offer that kind of support for the caregivers as well.
Right.
What do you love about your job?
So I love the idea of building community. Mm-hmm. And I think that's so much of what we do is about building community. It's engaging all of the folks that we support. It's engaging their families. It's engaging the Northfield community and the larger community to come together and create a whole.
And you do that a lot. And there's one in particular, of course, it's the Thanksgiving dinner.
Sure.
Were you a part of getting that started then?
I was, yes. Yeah. It was in my early years as executive director, and actually one of our director of community relations at the time, Arlen Malika, came to me and said, we do Thanksgiving for our clients every year. Could we open that to the community? And I thought it was a great idea. So we launched it then, and 20 years later, we're still doing it, and it's grown every year.
Oh, yeah. So. It's pretty amazing. Most of us have heard there are challenges in serving the intellectually and developmentally disabled community, but I don't think many of us clearly understand those challenges. What are you seeing are the biggest hurdles?
Reimbursement is a huge challenge in how those services are funded, which creates issues with staffing and other things like that. Housing for people who aren't accessing our residential services, finding affordable, accessible housing is a huge challenge, and it's something that communities don't necessarily see as a need. They don't include it in their plans. And public perception is an issue of what we actually do. We tend to find that as the public hears more about people who are more able, that their support for funding actually goes down. So finding a way to help people understand that a person with an intellectual and developmental disability is a person first, mm-hmm. right. and that they need some support, and we have to find ways to build that.
Tell us a little bit more about the reimbursement issue.
Sure. So our services are paid for largely by Medicaid. The folks that we support tend to be on the very low end of income. Their income is largely Social Security, and they may earn some income from a job, but it's very minimal. So their monthly income could be $900 to $1,200 a month. And that means that they qualify for Medicaid. And in order to stay qualified for Medicaid, they actually have to keep their income at a very low level.
Yeah.
And so our rates for providing services are set by the government. We don't get to decide how much to charge. And so if the government decides not to increase our rates, we have to continue to do more with less as costs increase in various areas.
Yeah, because that's not going to get lower. That's right. Just going to get higher, and that would speak to staffing issues.
Correct. So we try to do what we can to support our staff, but it makes it really difficult. We haven't had an increase in all of our rates since 2014. And in 2017, we actually received a decrease in some of our rates, which we received a partial increase last year. But, you know, being made whole is challenging.
I can just imagine. What might be at least part of a solution?
We actually have sort of multi-pronged. So we do some advocacy with the legislature to say, please understand our issues and raise our rates. We're actually looking at how we can diversify our revenue sources so that we're more stable and less dependent on those government decisions. And we do fundraising and we do community partnerships. So how can we share costs and various things that will help to decrease that pressure?
Tell us a little bit more about those community partnerships.
So a recent one is that we partnered with the Community Action Center to bring in an employee resource specialist who sits with our employees and helps them to find resources, like whether it's medical insurance, housing, connects them to things like food stamps and those kind of things, because our employees tend to qualify for those kind of benefits.
As far as the housing goes, do you find a situation where you have to turn people away?
Yes. So we have a waiting list.
Yeah,
yes.
Okay.
And as we think about people living more independently in the community, being able to find housing that they can afford and maintain is really challenging, especially in a town like Northfield, where, you know, Rice County is the third most expensive county to live in Minnesota. And so finding affordable housing is a real challenge. We work with another community partnership where we are part of the Affordable Housing Task Force to try to figure out solutions for those kind of things.
So there's at least there's things going on. You're constantly trying to find solutions, but boy, it's really pedaling that bike fast, isn't it?
It is. Yes.
Yeah. Now, you've been with LBSA for, well, since 1983. I'm not a mathematician, so I'm not going to go there, but how have you seen the industry change, both in good ways and bad ways?
So I think that a significant change has been more and more of the industry is focusing on supporting individuals to live the lives that they choose, and that's a good thing. It has gone from very much congregate care to more individualized care. And again, that's a good thing. I think the challenges have been that public support has decreased over time in terms of supporting reimbursement and understanding our issues. It actually went from being 96% of the people in the mid-1980s to, in a recent survey, I think it was 2015, being 76% of people.
Really?
Yes, I was shocked.
Why is that, do you think?
Here's my theory.
Okay.
Is that as we elevate the things that people can do, people see that they don't feel like they need to support it in the same way. Those people should be able to work and do things. And that's why I emphasize the fact that our folks are people and they need support.
How difficult is that for people to get jobs? I mean, are there very many out there?
About 30% of people with intellectual and developmental disabilities have jobs. Okay. And we have done some things to try to encourage local businesses to see people with intellectual and developmental disabilities as potential employees. And I think working through the perceptions that people have or experiences that they've had in the past is challenging. So it takes time to kind of get there. I think most people are very supportive and willing, but they're not quite sure how to make that happen.
We've talked about the challenges. Let's talk about how Laura Baker helps the community in terms of care and services provided.
So I guess we would say that, you know, we're a resource for families, and even if they don't come to us for services in the long run, that we help to connect them to places. In some ways, it's going back to that building community idea of we're connecting people to each other and encouraging them to create resources, being that place that they can come to help navigate system issues that can be challenging, and then providing support for people, advocating for changing the way people see our services and our needs.
I'm sure you talk with other organizations such as yourself around the state and around the country.
Correct.
How do you see a comparison with Laura Baker as opposed to some of the other areas? I mean, as a little area here in our little bubble of Northfield, we just see Laura Baker as a shining example. What does it look like a little bit further out?
That's a great question. There's a whole array, just mm-hmm. as there is in anything else. I see a lot of organizations that are consolidating and going to the sort of bigger model so that they can provide more efficient service, which I think is an outcome of the reimbursement mm-hmm. challenges that people continue to look for ways to make the dollars work. I think that good providers are looking for ways to be innovative. I think in some ways we do lead the way mm-hmm. in terms of looking for those innovative solutions. I think educating the community is a piece that, you know, getting the community on board, helping them to understand how can you help, you know, mm-hmm. how can you support, yeah. How can you be a friend, how can you make space in your business or in your housing project or all of those kind of things, that the community needs to see that it isn't just for the experts, it's for everybody.
Yeah, absolutely. And, you know, as you talk about that, you offer, I mean, Laura Baker, there are numerous opportunities for volunteerism. Talk to our listeners about the effect working with LBSA clients has had on those volunteers.
I think that people tend to be surprised that it's a give-and-take relationship, and that the thing I hear most often from volunteers or people who get engaged is that I'm getting more out of this than I'm giving. And yeah. I think that they find that there's a relationship possibility there that they wouldn't necessarily have understood before they got engaged. And yeah. so
there's so many programs that you offer at LBSA. Talk to us a little bit about that.
We have, in addition to our residential programs, we provide a creative arts program. So we do music therapy. We have a choir. We invite anybody from the community who's interested to be a part of that. Our creative arts, we do some all kinds of arts. And so we've invited people like Rob Hardy to be a poet in residence who mm-hmm. worked with some of our clients to write poetry. Angie Eckern has provided visual art work with some of our clients. Bridget Novak is our art specialist, and she invites community partners to be a part of that and to engage mm-hmm. in art with our clients. I mentioned earlier our family support opportunity. We've had a relationship with St. John's Church where we have done art there to help connect people to each other, to help build some of those relationships and to make those community connections.
So. That's a lot. That's a lot. I have one other question that I don't know if I want to ask or not. and it's, what would happen if LBSA had to close its doors?
Likely the state would come in and provide some kind of support for those people. But the people that we're supporting would be facing a change in service provider, perhaps in attitudes and all of those kind of things. We have 170 employees who would likely be looking for work elsewhere. And I think that the community piece of this, the building of community, the connections to community, mm-hmm. the sort of innovative things that we're working on would be at risk of being lost. Because I think it's one thing to provide the service. It's another thing to kind of think beyond the service into what else could be mm-hmm. and how do we make this work.
And as community members are listening to this, what can you tell them in terms of how to get involved?
The easy sort of answers are that we are always looking for advocates, and there's an easy way to do that on our website. We love people who donate. That's one of the ways that we expand our services. You can volunteer. We have a volunteer coordinator who is happy to figure out where you might be a best fit. And we really do want community I talk about this all the time, but we really are looking for community partners. And mm-hmm. it's things like, you know, KYMN opening this conversation up is a way that we partner. The CAC example is a way that we partner, the partnership with St. John's and the Affordable Housing Task Force. These are all things where you never know what will happen if you're part of a conversation. And so we would encourage people to share your voices, share your thoughts, be a part of the conversation, join the community.
Yeah. Well, and we are going to have, of course, all kinds of links and much more information on our website, kymnradio.net, posted along with this interview. As we wrap up, is there anything else that you'd like to share?
I don't think so at this point in time.
All right. It's been a lot. It really has. But, well, thank you so much for your time, Sandy. Thank you for what you do at LBSA. It really is a shining example, and we're very lucky in this community to have Laura Baker and to have you at the helm.
Oh, thank you.
We are going to be continuing these conversations, talking with all sorts of other people that are involved at Laura Baker Services Association. And of course, we invite you to stay tuned.